My name is Frank, I'm an addict.
Hi, Frank.
And nice to see people that I know here. Some of them I've known for a few years and some have not. But you're all friends tonight, and it's really important that I acknowledge that. You know, I'm not going to go into a drink or a drug log because I don't need to. You all know what it's like to use. Just to say that I started using when I was 8. And I stopped when I was 49. And I'm 68 now, so it'll give you an idea of how long I've been clean. And I've only been clean because of this program. You know, when I think back over the years of all the using that I've done and the craziness that I got up to, it was all drink and drug related. And, you know, when I think back over that period of time, how this program has helped me sustain that recovery, it's not been hard. It's not been easy. It's been fucking hard work, real hard work, because I've had to look at stuff without the crutch of, as I used to say, drink on one hand and drugs on the other hand. And I always had something in me. From the time I was 6 years of age, I had something in me. And the first thing I ever used was 2 tablets of my mum's, and it sent me nuts. And it was just one of them things. And second thing I used was alcohol. One side of my family are publicans, and one side of my family are farmers. My dad's side is farmers. My mum's side are publicans. I've got 17 aunts and uncles that own pubs. So you can imagine where I spent most of my youth, in pubs. And by the time I was 14, I had a real problem with alcohol. And it was causing me all kind of problems. But, you know, I also had a problem with drugs by then, because one of my sisters was an epileptic, and she was a bad epileptic. She suffered from really bad epilepsy, and the doctors were prescribing her phenobarbital and another barbiturate. She didn't like taking them, and I did. I loved taking them. Her epilepsy got far out of control, and my addiction got out of control as well. And another thing I loved using was veterinary drugs, because, you know, when the vets would come on the farm, and they were out on the farm almost every week, I would be in his bag and nick everything I could get out of it. And the main ingredients that they were giving cattle then were ketamine. They used to give it to a cow that was having her first calf, and one of them was like a great big lozenger like that, like a 50-pence piece. One of them, and a pint of Guinness, and you think you were Superman. And you could fucking, honestly, it was crazy. The stuff I would get up to would be crazy. You know, and, you know, that was my introduction to drugs. And it got worse and worse. It never, ever got better. You know, I left home when I was 15 because I had a row with my dad over drinking and drugging. Well, it was primarily over my drinking, because my drinking was out of control. But he also mentioned the drugging. You know, the vets used to hate coming to the farm because they knew I'd be raiding his bag. And it was that's the way it was for me. And I left home when I was 15. I went to North Wales to work on a fairground, and within 6 months of starting to work on that, I was hospitalised by the guy that owned it, because I was using an awful lot of speed and an awful lot of puff, and he caught me robbing him. I was fiddling him like left, right and centre, and he hospitalised me, and I swore I was going to get him, and I did. I waited until he was really busy. I went in, ripped him off for everything that was in the caravan and the safe, cleaned it out, and I set fire to the caravan and his big one that he used to use for a home. I thought, I'll get you, you bastard. And that's what I did. And I moved down to London, and I had a good few quid in my pocket with my mate, and we decided we were going to buy a motorbike. We bought an old pre-unit Triumph Bonneville, and that took us all around Europe for the next 2 years. And we got kicked out of country after country after country for raiding chemists, drunk and disorderly, you know, just general fucking mayhem. And I was four days past my 17th birthday, and I was sitting in Ladbroke Grove on the back of this bike, and my mate Jerry was on the back of it, and we had an old 10 bob note between us and pauperdom. That was it. We hadn't another penny and no way of getting it except going out robbing it. And by this time I'd got sick and fucking tired of, you know, ripping off chemists, ripping and running like a lunatic. And I said to Jerry, what are we going to do now? And it was, you know, I always say God looks after nutters and addicts and drunks. My grand used to say to me, because God will look after you because you're just a fool. And there was a huge big sign across the road from us, and it said, join the parachute regiment and see the world. I've looked at Jerry like that, and he went, why not? And on the bottom of it, in little writing, was where we had to go. And we had to ask this copper, how do we get to Colchester? And he went, you go out this road, blah, 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 blah. And we turned up there at 5:30 on a Saturday evening. Now, there was a young squaddy on the gate doing guard duty on the gate, and he's trying to convince us to piss off. And, you know, things worked out in strange ways for us, because just then a regimental sergeant major walked out and he said, what's the problem, boys? Now, if you can picture it, two lunatics on the back of a motorbike. None of us are too clean. I haven't had a bath for about a week. He's done the same. I've got long, greasy, scraggly hair and a little bit of wispy beard. And he's the same. And what we turned around and said, we want to join your regiment, and this guy is telling us we can't. And he looked us up and down and he went, are you sure? Really indignant. I've never been more sure in my life. I'll show these bastards. And I'm mad. You know, my head is gone. And that's what I done. I signed on for 6 years. I always said he was a bigger nutter than me because he signed on for 22. But the difference was he made a career out of it. I didn't. I was constantly in trouble. All the time I was in there. I was, you know, for some reason, I took to weapons like a duck to water, and I was damn good at it. I became a weapon instructor, and I was a marksman, and all, you know, with all the weapons that the British Army had, and I used to get sent to these strange places to teach the native troops in Aden, you know, Somalia, and places like that all over the world. Kenya was another one, and We were there in Kenya in 1959, chasing the Mau Mau up in the Aberdares, and a lot of my friends got killed out there. Cyprus was the same. A lot of mates got killed out there, and with the True Shalom and Scouts, and you know, those were the places I got sent to, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it, because I lived on the edge, you know. What that done for me is what drugs done for me in the beginning. It took away all the feelings that I ever had. and I lived on the edge. And that's what I've done all my life, lived on the edge. I lived in fear, but I could never tell anyone that I was full of fear, especially my mates in the regiment. I grew up in fear. I grew up in fear because my mum was a real strong character, and she never hit me. Now, neither did my dad, but her thing was, just you wait until your dad comes home. Now, I would be, what's he gonna do? What's he gonna do? I'd be in bed. I wouldn't see him from one end of the week to the next because he was working. He was a workaholic, not an alcoholic, but a workaholic. He was trying to keep a big farm going, and he worked all the hours God sent him. You know, God bless him, it drove him into his grave, an early grave. And when I joined the army, that was the same thing. I got the buzz from there. And in 1962, in September of 1962, I got a post into Berlin. And Berlin then was a wide open city. And you could get anything you wanted. And I went back to using again. I started using speed, and before long I was back on the coke. And I was back on using the puff. I was using everything I could get my hands on again. And alcohol was a constant thing for me. And one of the jobs I had to do there, because I was made up to a corporal by this time, and that had happened to me a couple of times, I'd made up and busted and made up again. And one of the jobs I had to do was drive back to the barracks and pick up the rations for all the guys in Spandau prison. And it was a whole company. And I decided I was going to stop and have one drink. That one drink cost me 15 months in Colchester. A military corrective training centre in Colchester. Because that one drink started something that carried on for years. What I've done is I got in and I've had that one drink. Someone's offered me a line. That went up my nose. And there was a couple of tablets. I didn't know what the fuck they were. They went down my neck. And another drink, and another drink, and another drink. And I run out of money. And opposite us was a big bank. I've got an SLR. And I walked across the street in full uniform with an SLR and went in and robbed this fucking bank. And like I was invisible. Like I was invisible. And I walked out of there and I had a gun put on my chin and one put on the side of my head. I was put on the floor, cuffed up and handed over to the military police. And eventually I was court-martialed. And on that court-martial, you know, they read out, you know, all the trouble I got into down the years, blah, 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 blah. And it was all petty shit. I eventually got 15 months and a dishonourable discharge. And Colchester was, it was a military corrective training centre. And they thought I was going to knuckle down and do all this running around the square and route, you know, marching here, there and everywhere. And my idea was, the day I got there, fuck you, and I wouldn't put a uniform on again. I wouldn't put a uniform on me at all. As far as I was concerned, I was out of the army and I didn't have to follow any of their rules. You know, they tried to change my mind in big ways. A lot of violence from both sides of the coin. And on the fourth day I was there, I went in there on a Tuesday, and on the Friday this captain came down and he was reading the riot act to me, and I just lost it and I chinned him. And the few months remission that I had, that went out the window. So I'd done the whole of the 15 months there. And, you know, when I came out of there, the world owed me a living. That's what I thought. And the world did, as far as I was concerned, and I went out to get it. And I was ruthless, absolutely ruthless in the way that I went about getting everything that I wanted, whether it be drugs, money. You know, if I went after a bag, I took the bag. If the guy got in the way, I'd shoot the fucker. And I'd done that a couple of times. In the end, for 6 years I run like that, like a madman. Drinking, drugging, and I picked up a really heavy habit by this time. And, you know, when I think back over that period of time, it was pure insane what I was doing. I was completely out of control, and I didn't care about anyone. I didn't care about me, so why would I give a toss about anyone else? And I was full of fear. I could never say it to anyone. I could have a gun in my hand, and I'd be ruthless with it, but I could never tell you what was going on inside. Inside, I was dying. I was dying. And I didn't even know it. And, you know, it come to a point in 1969 where I killed somebody. I shot a guy that I believed had set me up, and I killed him. I shot him like a dog. I shot him twice in the head, you know, and never thought another thing about it. That's how far I had gone. I don't brag about this. It's something that, in my history, it's not something I'm proud of. I regret that to this very day. But I've made amends for it. And the way I've made amends is that I don't behave like that today. I reach out to others and try to help today. That's how I made that amends. And eventually I got sent down for it. And it cost me 26 and a half years of my life. 26 years, 6 months, and 6 days. Exactly. Because even inside, I never stopped taking drugs. And throughout all of that, in 1989, I got my first day out, and I went, it's party time. And it was. I was standing in the car park in Ford with a bottle of vodka, looking at the screw across the road, winding him up and necking this bottle of vodka. And he was running across the road to nick me back in. And I said to my mates, drive off. And before I hit the roundabout at Arundel, I'm on the pipe. I had a few lines of Charlie up my nose first, and then I thought, fuck this, I want a pipe. And that's what I done. I went into blackout. I was supposed to be back in the jail at 3 o'clock that day, or 3:30. They dumped me outside the jail at 10 o'clock that night. Completely, utterly insane. I woke up 5 days later, in a different jail, 180 miles away, in a strip cell, covered in my own filth. And there was a guy looking down at me, and I hadn't a clue who he was. And he said, you're in real serious trouble now. They're going to charge you with attempted murder. And I had no idea what I'd done. I had absolutely none. And that wasn't the first time I'd woke up like that, covered in blood, covered in puke, after being in a blackout. My heart was pounding. And that was the 11th of April in 1990. And from that day to this, I haven't had a drug, because that was the day that I turned around and said to myself, Frank, you have a problem. You have a problem with drugs. The first time in my life that I admitted to myself. People have been telling me down the years, oh, you don't know what it's like. But for the first time in my life, I admitted to myself I had a problem. Now I had couple of ounces of puff, an ounce of coke, and an ounce of smack up my jacksie. And ladies, don't ask. I'm not going to tell you. But that's where I had it. And I went into the loo and just dropped it and flushed it. And I went cold turkey. For 27 days in that strip cell, I went cold turkey. I wouldn't recommend it to a dog, never mind a human being, because I was fucking nuts. And I nearly died 3 times in the first week. I had grand mal seizures, and, you know, they called specialists in, they called doctors in, blah, blah, blah. And I remember this one doctor said to me, let me help you, let me give you something, and I want to kill him, because he wanted to put me back on drugs. That's how messed up my head was. And, you know, it's funny because as I'd gone cold turkey, I was clean for 7 weeks. I hadn't taken anything at all. My probation officer was in me. And he went, if you don't clean up, you're going to spend the rest of your life in prison. I tried to strangle him over the table. I haven't fucking used you, prick. And this is what I was screaming at him. I've got a load of screws hanging on me like leeches, and I'm back down in the seg unit again. It was nothing new. So, but, you know, what he said to me, he said, next year there's a program starting in Downview. He said, I can get you on this if you want. And out of pure pig ignorance, I said, right, I'll fucking do this program. I'll show you after 90 days I don't have to worry about anything. I'm going to be clean. I had no idea what this program was about. No idea what alcoholism was. No idea what addiction was. All I knew that I had a problem with drugs. And I had admitted it to myself for the first time. And, you know, I say God works in strange ways, because he puts the right people in the right place at the right time, and he did for me. And, but, you know, it took a bit of getting there in first, because the governor in this prison thought, you know, where am I letting you go on it? So it was coming up near this time of the year, and I think it was 2 weeks before Christmas when I got offered this. And I said, I'm telling you now, I'm making a promise to you, if you don't let me go on this program, I will leave you a cabbage. He said, are you threatening me? I said, no, I'm not threatening you, I'm promising you. I'm promising you I'll make you a cabbage. I'll cane your head in and leave you a cabbage. And what he done for me then was, 3 days later, I'm on the circuit again. I'm out and I'm going from jail to jail to jail to jail, and I had that for over a year. I stayed clean. I didn't use. I eventually got on this program because there was a governor in Birmingham that knew me from old, and he went, are you serious about getting on this program? I said, I've never been more serious in my life. I hadn't a clue what the program was, but I wanted it. I wanted to prove to them I could stay clean. Now, when I got on it, I was 14 months clean, but completely barked and mad. And, you know, as I say, God puts the right people in the right place, and he put the right people for me. And I got introduced to this program very slowly, because the first 3 groups folded up because they were all using. And the governor in Downview, he went, if this group folds, he said, everyone has gone back to the jail that he came from. And I knew what that meant for me. I know I'm going back into the fucking system again. So he walked away, and we closed the door, and I said, if there's anyone here wants to use, now is the time to get up and walk away. I said, because if this group falls, I'll fucking stab you to death. I was that mad. And that, The great thing was, 14 people on that group are still clean. We all pay for debt. We all reached out to help one another. That was the difference. We made a commitment to each other. And, you know, I had a text from every one of them, and I had a call from a few of them, and over to Christmas, and they're all still clean and sober. That's the whole difference, because we work together. We couldn't have done this on our own. I know I couldn't anyway. And that was what was the difference for me. I couldn't do it on my own. And, you know, it was funny because the first meeting that was there was only one meeting a week there. And it was an AA meeting. And it was funny because the woman that came in, she was a pearly housewife, and she was a banker's wife. Twin set and pearls, God bless her, but she was lovely. And but one thing she said that I identified with was the way that she drank and the feelings. She talked about her feelings. Now, I've always wanted to run away from my feelings because I could never handle them. Fear was my biggest feeling, and I never liked it. So I wanted to get away from it. And I drank, and I used everything from fantasy to sex, food, you name it, and I will use it. Because I didn't like that feeling. Today I understand what it's like and how to deal with it. And how I deal with it is by using the program. Using the steps, you know. That old guy is still my sponsor today. You know, he's 51 years sober. 51 years. And he has a mountain of information about this program. And he's passed it on to me. And I've had the pleasure and the joy of passing it on to other people. And I've had that because three things that he's always said to me in the beginning was service, steps, and sponsorship will help you stay clean when you're struggling. And he said, if through your struggles, get your ass to a meeting. Come back. Always get to a meeting. And that's the one thing that I've always done. You know, when it was funny, when he suggested, when I came out, 14 years ago, I left the Scrubs. 15 years ago, I was in the hospital in the Scrubs. And a friend of mine in this fellowship said to me, Frank, would you like to house sit for me for 3 months? I said, is the Pope a Catholic? Now, a huge big house up in Kendall Rise that was worth about 3 or 4 million quid. You know, and I'm sitting in a grotty room in the Scrubs Hospital. Of course I would. And he lent me the use of 2 cars as well, his one and his wife's one. So, you know, and I had to go to the screw in the hospital. And he said, it's not a problem, just come back here every day and book in. And that's what I done for 3 months. And then I had to go into a treatment centre that the Home Office taught in their wisdom that they were going, I needed to do. I didn't, because, you know, it was just one of them things I had to do to get out, and I was willing to do anything. But in that time, I made an awful lot of friends. That gave me a chance to make an awful lot of friends in the fellowship. And the one thing I learned about this program, it's not an I program, it's a we program. We can, I can. And when I look back over at the years, some of those friends are still there. A lot of them are not, because they've walked out and they've used and they've died. And when someone starts talking about a relapse, my ears go and prick up, because they've got real information for me. I don't want to make the same mistake. I've seen too many people go back out there and use and die. And when someone talks about that, my ears prick up. And, you know, down along the years of my, you know, my sobriety and my clean time, I've picked up a huge amount of information from old-timers, from newcomers, from everybody, because I listen. I reach out to help. It's important that I give back what I was given, because what I was given is priceless. No amount of money could pay for what I've been given. I've been given a life beyond my wildest dreams. I've done things in the last 15 years that I used to sit in a cell and fantasize about. I'd be looking at the National Geographic. I'd love to go there. I'd love to do that. I've done all those things. You know, I've dived off the Great Barrier Reef, in the Indian Ocean, in the South China Seas, everywhere that I can. I learned to dive when I got out. I go scuba diving every year. Every year I go scuba diving, because it's something I love. And I can only do that because I'm clean. I couldn't do that. I couldn't leave Ladbroke fucking Grove when I was using. I was too afraid. Too afraid to leave there because I'd be going away from my dealers. I don't have that fear today. I have a freedom that's beyond price. No amount of money could pay for it. The thing about, you know, this program is you get out what you put in. If you put a tiny bit in, you'll get a tiny bit out. If you put a lot in, you get a lot out. This is about your life. It's a life-changing experience. And if you put everything that... When you were using, I know for this addict, when I was using, I was willing to go to any length. And I'm sure, without one shadow of a doubt, I will go to any length to sustain my program today, because it's that important to me. If I have to walk away from a relationship, a marriage or anything, nothing comes in front of it. My family, nothing. It comes first. You know, I've got married since I've come out. I've had dozens of holidays. You know, I'll go on holidays like that. And last year I went on 4 of them, or 5 of them, you know. And when we came back from Egypt, I think it was May or June last year, and it was pissing down, I just said to Jane, let's book another holiday. And that's what we've done. We turned around within a week and went back, and I was back on the beach for another 3 weeks. I can do that today because I'm sober and clean. If I was using, I couldn't do anything like that, because I wouldn't, first of all, I wouldn't have the finances to do it, and I wouldn't have the freedom to do it. This is about freedom, and freedom for me is not about incarceration. Freedom is about choice. The choices I have today are immense. You know, just even walk into a shop. You know, when I was inside, and I'd be thinking about this, I couldn't do that. I can do whatever I choose to do today, providing I keep this program in the forefront of my head. Because if I don't do that, I don't have any freedom. You know, when... I'll finish off with this. I had the pleasure last Thursday of being in the Scrubs. And a young black kid said to me, he went, how am I going to stay clean over Christmas? And I went, a good question. And I said, you don't even know, but you're doing the first part of step one. You're asking for help. And I said, can you get your head on the pillow tonight? He said, you know I can, I'm going straight to myself. I said, great. I said, tomorrow morning, when you get up, ask God to help. I do that every day. So we've established you've got a higher power. Great. Step two. And I said, tomorrow morning, when you get up, say to your mate, I'm feeling a little bit ropey. And he'll look out for you. And you can look out for him. And this next guy, and the next guy, and the next guy. I said, there's 10 of you here. The core of a great group to help each other. I said, because this is a we program, not an I program. We can, I can't. I said, hopefully one day, if I'm ever in trouble, you can be there for me. The one message I want to leave you with tonight is that we can, I can't. And I'm going to finish it there. Thanks.